Chapter 74. By 9 o'clock, more brandy and water was dispatched. Several speeches were made by the different law students present. Thanks were voted to the chairman, and the meeting separated. The weather had been beautiful up to this period, and beautiful it continued to be. Sunday passed over, and Mr. Percy Noakes became unusually fidgety, rushing constantly to and from the steam packet wharf, to the astonishment of the clerks, and the great emolument of the Holborn cabman. Tuesday arrived, and the anxiety of Mr. Percy Noakes knew no bounds. He was every instant running to the window, to look out for clouds, and Mr. Hardy astonished the whole square, by practicing a new comic song for the occasion, in the chairman's chambers. Uneasy were the slumbers of Mr. Percy Noakes that night. He tossed and tumbled about, and had confused dreams of steamers starting off, and gigantic clocks with the hands pointing to 9:15, and the ugly face of Mr. Alexander Briggs looking over the boat's side, and grinning, as if in derision of his fruitless attempts to move. He made a violent effort to get on board, and awoke. The bright sun was shining cheerfully into the bedroom, and Mr. Percy Noakes started up for his watch, in the dreadful expectation of finding his worst dreams realized. It was just 5 o'clock. He calculated the time he should be a good half hour dressing himself, and as it was a lovely morning, and the tide would be then running down, he would walk leisurely to Strand Lane, and have a boat to the Custom House. He dressed himself, took a hasty apology for a breakfast, and sallied forth. The streets looked as lonely and deserted as if they had been crowded, overnight, for the last time. Here and there, an early apprentice, with quenched-looking sleepy eyes, was taking down the shutters of a shop, and a policeman or milkwoman might occasionally be seen pacing slowly along, but the servants had not yet begun to clean the doors, or light the kitchen fires, and London looked the picture of desolation. At the corner of a by-street, near Temple Bar, was stationed a street breakfast. Apostrophe the coffee was boiling over a charcoal fire, and large slices of bread and butter were piled one upon the other, like deals in a timber yard. The company were seated on a form, which, with a view both to security and comfort, was placed against a neighboring wall. Two young men, whose uproarious mirth and disordered dress bespoke the conviviality of the preceding evening, were treating three ladies and an Irish laborer. A little sweep was standing at a short distance, casting a longing eye at the tempting delicacies, and a policeman was watching the group from the opposite side of the street. The wan looks and gaudy finery of the thinly clad women contrasted as strangely with the gay sunlight, as did their forced merriment with the boisterous hilarity of the two young men, who, now and then, varied their amusements by bonneting the proprietor of this itinerant coffee house. Mr. Percy Noakes walked briskly by, and when he turned down Strand Lane, and caught a glimpse of the glistening water, he thought he had never felt so important, or so happy in his life. "Boat, sir?" " cried one of the three watermen who were mopping out their boats, and all whistling. "Boat, sir?" " replied Mr. Percy Noakes, rather sharply, for the inquiry was not made in a manner at all suitable to his dignity. "Would you prefer a vessel, sir?" " inquired another, to the infinite delight of the Jack in the water. Mr. Percy Noakes replied with a look of supreme contempt. "Did you want to be put on board a steamer, sir?" " inquired an old fireman waterman, very confidentially. He was dressed in a faded red suit, just the color of the cover of a very old court guide. "Yes, make haste the Endeavor off the Custom House." " cried the man who had convulsed the Jack before. "Why, I see the Endeavor go up half an hour ago." " so did I, said another, "and I should think she'd gone down by this time, for she's a precious sight too full of ladies and gentlemen." apostrophe, Mr. Percy Noakes affected to disregard these representations, and stepped into the boat, which the old man, by dint of scrambling, and shoving, and grating, had brought up to the causeway. Shove her off. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Percy Noakes, and away the boat glided down the river. Mr. Percy Noakes seated on the recently mopped seat, and the waterman at the stairs offering, to bet him any reasonable sum, that he'd never reach the customs. Apostrophe, here she is, by Jove. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the delighted Percy, as they ran alongside the Endeavour. Hold hard. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the steward over the side, and Mr. Percy Noakes jumped on board. Hope you will find everything as you wished, sir. She looks uncommon well this morning. Apostrophe, she does, indeed, apostrophe, replied the manager, in a state of ecstasy which it is impossible to describe. The deck was scrubbed, and the seats were scrubbed, and there was a bench for the band, and a place for dancing, and a pile of camp stools, and an awning. And then Mr. Percy Noakes bustled down below, and there were the pastry cook's men, and the steward's wife, laying out the dinner on two tables the whole length of the cabin. And then Mr. Percy Noakes took off his coat and rushed backwards and forwards, doing nothing, but quite convinced he was assisting everybody. And the steward's wife laughed till she cried, and Mr. Percy Noakes panted with the violence of his exertions. And then the bell at London Bridge Wharf rang, and a Margate boat was just starting, and a Gravesend boat was just starting, and people shouted, and porters ran down the steps with luggage that would crush any men but porters, and sloping boards, with bits of wood nailed on them, were placed between the outside boat and the inside boat, and the passengers ran along them, and looked like so many fowls coming out of an area. And then, the bell ceased, and the boards were taken away, and the boats started, and the whole scene was one of the most delightful bustle and confusion. The time wore on. 8:30 arrived. The pastry cook's men went ashore. The dinner was completely laid out, and Mr. Percy Noakes locked the principal cabin, and put the key in his pocket, in order that it might be suddenly disclosed, in all its magnificence, to the eyes of the astonished company. The band came on board, and so did the wine. 9:10, and the committee embarked in a body. There was Mr. Hardy, in a blue jacket and waistcoat, white trousers, silk stockings, and pumps in full aquatic costume, with a straw hat on his head, and an immense telescope under his arm. And there was the young gentleman with the green spectacles, in nankeen inexplicables, with a ditto waistcoat and bright buttons, like the pictures of Paul not the saint, but he of Virginia notoriety. The remainder of the committee, dressed in white hats, light jackets, waistcoats, and trousers, looked something between waiters and West India planters. 9:00 struck, and the company arrived in shoals. Mr. Samuel Briggs, Mrs. Briggs, and the Mrs. Briggs, made their appearance in a smart private wherry. The three guitars, in their respective dark green cases, were carefully stowed away in the bottom of the boat, accompanied by two immense portfolios of music, which it would take at least a week's incessant playing to get through. The Tauntons arrived at the same moment with more music, and a lionet gentleman with a bass voice and an incipient red mustache. The colors of the Taunton party were pink, those of the Briggses a light blue. The Tauntons had artificial flowers in their bonnets. Here the Briggses gained a decided advantage, they wore feathers. How do you do, dear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the Mrs. Briggs to the Mrs. Taunton. The word dear among girls is frequently synonymous with wretch. Apostrophe, quite well, thank you, dear, apostrophe, replied the Mrs. Taunton to the Mrs. Briggs. And then, there was such a kissing, and congratulating, and shaking of hands, as might have induced one to suppose that the two families were the best friends in the world, instead of each wishing the other overboard, as they most sincerely did. Mr. Percy Noakes received the visitors, and bowed to the strange gentleman, as if he should like to know who he was. This was just what Mrs. Taunton wanted. Here was an opportunity to astonish the Briggses. "Oh, I beg your pardon," apostrophe said the general of the Taunton party, with a careless air. "Captain Elves, Mr. Percy notes Mrs. Briggs, Captain Elves." Apostrophe, Mr. Percy notes bowed very low. The gallant captain did the same with all due ferocity, and the Briggses were clearly overcome. "Our friend, Mr. Whizzle, being unfortunately prevented from coming," apostrophe resumed Mrs. Taunton, "I did myself the pleasure of bringing the captain, whose musical talents I knew would be a great acquisition. Apostrophe, in the name of the committee I have to thank you for doing so, and to offer you welcome, sir," apostrophe replied Percy. Here the scraping was renewed. "But pray be seated, won't you walk aft? Captain, will you conduct Miss Taunton? Miss Briggs, will you allow me?" Apostrophe, where could they have picked up that military man? Apostrophe inquired Mrs. Briggs of Miss Kate Briggs, as they followed the little party. "I can't imagine," apostrophe replied Miss Kate, bursting with vexation, for the very fierce air with which the gallant captain regarded the company had impressed her with a high sense of his importance. Boat after boat came alongside, and guest after guest arrived. The invites had been excellently arranged. Mr. Percy Notes having considered it as important that the number of young men should exactly tally with that of the young ladies, as that the quantity of knives on board should be in precise proportion to the forks. "Now, is everyone on board?" Apostrophe inquired Mr. Percy Notes. The committee, who, with their bits of blue ribbon, looked as if they were all going to be bled, bustled about to ascertain the fact, and reported that they might safely start. "Go on!" Apostrophe cried the master of the boat from the top of one of the paddle boxes. "Go on!" Apostrophe echoed the boy, who was stationed over the hatchway, to pass the directions down to the engineer. And away went the vessel with that agreeable noise which is peculiar to steamers, and which is composed of a mixture of creaking, gushing, clanging, and snorting. "Hoy, oi, 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 oi!" Apostrophe shouted half a dozen voices from a boat, a quarter of a mile astern. "Ease her!" Apostrophe cried the captain. "Do these people belong to us, sir?" Apostrophe exclaimed Hardy, who had been looking at every object far and near, through the large telescope. "It's the Fleetwoods and the Wakefields and two children with them, by Jove! Apostrophe, what a shame to bring children!" Apostrophe said everybody. "How very inconsiderate! Apostrophe, I say, it would be a good joke to pretend not to see him, wouldn't it?" Apostrophe suggested Hardy, to the immense delight of the company generally. A council of war was hastily held, and it was resolved that the newcomers should be taken on board, on Mr. Hardy solemnly pledging himself to tease the children during the whole of the day. "Stop her!" Apostrophe cried the captain. "Stop her!" Apostrophe repeated the boy. Whiz went the steam, and all the young ladies, as in duty bound, screamed in concert. They were only appeased by the assurance of the martial elves that the escape of steam consequent on stopping a vessel was seldom attended with any great loss of human life. Two men ran to the side, and after some shouting, and swearing, and angling for the wherry with a boat hook, Mr. Fleetwood, and Mrs. Fleetwood, and Master Fleetwood, and Mr. Wakefield, and Mrs. Wakefield, and Miss Wakefield, were safely deposited on the deck. The girl was about 6 years old, the boy about four. The former was dressed in a white frock with a pink sash and dog's-eared looking little Spencer. A straw bonnet and green veil, 6 inches by 3.5. The latter was attired for the occasion in a nankeen frock, between the bottom of which, and the top of his plaid socks, a considerable portion of two small mottled legs was discernible. He had a light blue cap with a gold band and tassel on his head, and a damp piece of gingerbread in his hand, with which he had slightly embossed his countenance. The boat once more started off. The band played Off She Goes. The major part of the company conversed cheerfully in groups, and the old gentleman walked up and down the deck in pairs, as perseveringly and gravely, as if they were doing a match against time for an immense stake. They ran briskly down the pool. The gentleman pointed out the docks, the Thames Police Office, and other elegant public edifices, and the young ladies exhibited a proper display of horror at the appearance of the coal whippers and ballast heavers. Mr. Hardy told stories to the married ladies, at which they laughed very much in their pocket handkerchiefs, and hit him on the knuckles with their fans, declaring him to be a naughty man, a shocking creature, and so forth. And Captain Elves gave slight descriptions of battles and duels, with a most bloodthirsty air, which made him the admiration of the women, and the envy of the men. Quadrilling commenced. Captain Elves danced one set with Miss Emily Taunton, and another set with Miss Sophia Taunton. Mrs. Taunton was in ecstasies. The victory appeared to be complete, but alas, the inconstancy of man! Having performed this necessary duty, he attached himself solely to Miss Julia Briggs, with whom he danced no less than three sets consecutively, and from whose side he evinced no intention of stirring for the remainder of the day. Mr. Hardy, having played one or two very brilliant fantasias on the Jew's harp, and having frequently repeated the exquisitely amusing joke of slyly chalking a large cross on the back of some member of the committee, Mr. Percy Noakes expressed his hope that some of their musical friends would oblige the company by a display of their abilities. Perhaps, apostrophe he said in a very insinuating manner, Captain Elves will oblige us? Apostrophe apostrophe Mrs. Taunton's countenance lighted up, for the captain only sang duets, and couldn't sing them with anybody but one of her daughters. Really, apostrophe said that warlike individual, I should be very happy, but apostrophe, oh, pray do, apostrophe cried all the young ladies. Miss Emily, have you any objection to join in a duet? Apostrophe apostrophe oh, not the slightest, apostrophe returned the young lady, in a tone which clearly showed she had the greatest possible objection. Shall I accompany you, dear? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired one of the Miss Briggses, with the bland intention of spoiling the effect. Very much obliged to you, Miss Briggs, apostrophe sharply retorted Mrs. Taunton, who saw through the maneuver. My daughters always sing without accompaniments. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.